what you do.
I own a financial firm.
The disconnect is like all we're focused on is wealth, wealth, wealth.
People still feel like the system has failed them.
Only saving is a dangerous mindset to have.
You can't save your way to wealth.
It's almost scammy.
The government definitely is not teaching you about financial literacy.
You're not as good as I am.
You can't come changing everything before I even know if you can do what I'm telling you to do already.
How do I ever get out of the bad debt?
Debt-free can't be the goal, because debt will actually help you to build wealth.
Welcome to another episode of Full Transparency with Donnie Wiggins, where I sit down and have outstanding conversations, fully transparent conversations with entrepreneurs who are doing big things in their journeys, but also entrepreneurs who have amazing stories to share. And today I am sitting down with a friend of mine that I'm excited for you guys to meet. This gentleman is a financial advisor, not just a financial advisor. He is a Hall of Fame winning, recognized financial advisor. He operates business here in the United States. He has real estate properties all over the globe. And I can't wait to hear from and learn from Mr. Marvin Mitchell. Hey, Marvin.
What's up, Donnie?
How are you?
I'm great.
You know, why is it taking so long to get you here?
You know what? I don't know. Well, real story. We actually recorded in like your first week.
We did.
And it was bad timing. Mm-hmm. So we said we're not going to air that episode. So we thought we were going to do it again in a couple of weeks, but it actually took months. But that's okay.
Yeah.
We got it.
I am proud that that episode didn't drop.
Oh, yeah. That would not have been a great episode.
That would not have been indicative to who you are as an outstanding human.
Right, yeah, right.
I'm glad that you didn't drop that episode. Yeah. You guys, and to open, that's a good opener, right? Yep. Sometimes we have things going on and we just need to chill for just a minute before we start opening in our mouths and speaking on things. So
exactly.
Here we are. Better than ever.
We're great now. This is going to be a great episode. I've been super excited to sit down with you, and I've been super excited to work with you, because we've actually done some work together on my team, and it's been amazing, and the business is growing. So, you know, so more ways than one. Thank you.
And it's an honor. So Marvin hired me in the role of an executive business consultant. And we're working on some things slowly but surely, working on some things in his business. And it's exciting and both challenging.
Right.
And you're such a high level entrepreneur. I want to publicly thank you and say it's an honor to be working with
your company.
So catch us up. Tell us about what you do. Financial education, the stuff that most of us think are the boring conversations.
Yeah. There's really three major things that I do from a work perspective. So number one, my main thing is I own a financial firm. So I've owned a financial firm now. This is going on my 18th year. And that firm is, I think we employ maybe about 26 individuals. And we're mostly located in St. Louis, Missouri. But we did open an office in Atlanta about a couple of years ago. So that's going really, really well. So I built that business to where I don't have to be there 24/7, which allowed me for the first time in like 16 years back then, a couple of years ago, to really go out and educate the masses. So I wanted to get this information out to more people. So I started a coaching program called Wealth Creators. So that coaching program is where we're teaching ordinary entrepreneurs and ordinary people who are looking to be potential entrepreneurs, how to not only grow and scale, but how to multiply their money, how to, you know, save money on taxes, leverage life insurance to make multiple dollars off the same dollar. And that's been really fun, because I've been able to help people who would not ordinarily have that information to grow. So that business was started as a side business, but I think in last year it actually outperformed my financial business. And it's still not my main business, but it just shows you just the opportunities that we have are just endless. Then the third thing that I do is I'm an investor. So I own over 400 units of real estate. I invest in businesses. I also do international investing in right now. So for Dubai and DR, and I'm looking into Ghana. And that's just been fun, just to expand my mindset and challenge myself every day.
Yeah. How do you find the time to do all of this stuff? Like you're a serial entrepreneur, successfully a serial entrepreneur. How are you managing your time?
Right. So I've learned to let go of what I don't like, but the hardest part was letting go of what I love too. So what I mean is, we all know that we all hear about, you know, if there's things that you don't like doing and you need to delegate that as quick as possible and do what you love. Mm-hmm. But then the things that you stick to that you love, you're actually making yourself the bottleneck in the business, and you're the one who's actually stopping the business growth. So I think the hardest part for me was to realize that, yes, I love the art of sales and converting somebody from a prospect to a client. That was fun for me because it gave me a charge. But the hardest part was letting that go and said, I'm not making my biggest impact if I'm the one sitting down making the sale. Mm-hmm. So I had to train up other individuals and actually fire myself, even from the manager of the sales team, to allow that sales team to grow. Same thing for marketing. I feel like I'm pretty good at marketing. Mm-hmm. But I also know that because I'm pretty good at marketing, it stops at me and everybody's coming back to me for information. So again, I had to say that, you know what? I'm stopping this company's growth because I'm in charge of marketing, even though I love it. So let me find a way to, you know, kind of reignite that spirit of leadership instead of just doing, and let me train somebody else to be in charge of marketing. So what I've been able to do is I've been able to find a way to have a self-managing company where it doesn't necessarily involve me, although I'm involved in the leadership meetings at the top. Mm-hmm. So many people think that you have more time when you have more people. That's not the case. You have more time when you focus on less people, and those people are focusing on more people. And I had to learn that. So I just have meetings with top people and I let them run the organization.
Mm. Do you ever, I know one of the struggles that many entrepreneurs face mm-hmm. is, because they are so good at whatever it is, the mm-hmm. sales or the marketing or the operations.
Right.
When they hire somebody, they don't do it just as good mm-hmm. or the exact way that they would have done it. How do you deal with that when you bring somebody on the team and you're like, I'm trusting you to do this and to mm-hmm. grow this, but you're not as good as I am. I could close more deals than you could close.
Yeah. So it's definitely a balancing act, and I'm mm-hmm. dealing with that today. First off, most people are not going to be as good as you are. It's your baby. It's your passion. It's what you love to do. So you have to let go of being better than you are, or even as good as you are. Now, there will be some people who do the job much better than you, and that's great too. But if you can find somebody who can do it 70, 75% as good as you do, and then on the back end, initially you clean it up until they're trained to do it. Because what if you can get five people, you can only do 100% capacity. Okay. But if you can get five people doing 70% capacity, mm-hmm. now we're looking at, what, 350%? Mm-hmm. You can only do 100. So you had to say that, you know what, my closing ratio might have been 40, but this person's might be 25. But if we can get five people doing 25, as long as the numbers are profitable, I can scale that. Mm. I can't scale my 40% to good. More people.
That's
you know?
Good. That's good. Okay, so at what point in your business did you realize, like, I'm operating at a high enough level to focus mm-hmm. on team, because you have so many people who work mm-hmm. for you.
So there, it hasn't come without setbacks, mm-hmm. right? So the first time I really walked away from the business, I made a lot of mistakes. So I built the business and I had this team and this leadership team that I thought was good and I thought that was in place, but we didn't have any good meeting rhythms. We didn't have any good communication, any good reporting, those internal structures that you need to have, those KPIs, those measurements. We didn't have all of that set. I just knew I had good people. Well, when I left for a while to kind of test it out, the business, because of the residuals of what I had initially did, mm-hmm. the business was going up. So I'm like, oh, we got this together. Yeah. But then eventually it started to go down. And as you know, as a business owner, when things start to go down, it's not going to turn around right away. You got to wait out the 2 to 3 months because it's a whole process to get things back turned around.
Yeah.
So I had stepped out and focused on my other business. Now, what I've done differently this time, unfortunately, I lost a lot of people because it didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And what I had to do is I had to step back in and I began to realize all of the cracks. So I got coaching. So I said, I need mentors, because obviously I can only take us so far, and the right. information that I thought I knew, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big thing, right? We have to learn to admit that it's okay to not know, and it's okay to get coaching. It's okay to hire a mentor. So I hired mentors, hired coaching. And what I realized is that I knew nothing about meeting rhythms. I knew nothing about having KPIs. My tracking numbers was horrible. So they helped me to really put some plans in place where I got all of that stuff, where I can look at my spreadsheet or I can look at my system and know exactly what's happening in the company, building out a CEO dashboard. So now I'm not necessarily managing people. I'm managing processes, and I'm making sure that we have good people that fit the core values to run the processes. So that was the other side of it, right? The other side of it is you can't just let people, even with the 70%, you can't just let them just run wild. There has to be an initial SOP or standard operating procedure, or there needs to be an initial system that they have to follow, because they're going to come in thinking they may know more than you, but first prove that you can do what I'm telling you to do first. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we can deviate and put your ideas in place, but you can't come changing everything before I even know if you can do what I'm telling you to do already. Mm-hmm.
You have a preference for hiring overseas?
Not necessarily. I do hire overseas, but in my financial company, it's more US based. Okay. But in my coaching program, that's almost fully ran. I would say that's 90% ran overseas, mm-hmm. In the Philippines. Mm-hmm. So I was the first financial advisor who really built this company, like Innovative, my financial firm, getting people from overseas, virtual professionals, because think about it. People's like, it's already hard enough to get somebody to invest.
Trying to produce high quality content as a business owner probably seems impossible right now with how busy you are. You probably have ideas, but you're burnt out and you just don't have the time, resources, or manpower to actually create ongoing high quality content. Freelancers are undependable, the employees you can afford are inexperienced, and agencies are way too expensive. So what's the solution? Breezy Content is a subscription that matches you with your very own content marketing team that will do everything from the strategy and planning of content to the writing, designing, and publishing of it. We handle everything from social media content to blog writing, SEO friendly content for your website, and even lead generation pieces. We have multiple research methodologies that we use, including interviews, questionnaires, and more, to make sure that all of the content we create for you is custom, high quality, and will actually move the needle for your business. Don't believe me? I get it. See what our real customers are saying. If you're interested in learning more, book a call today.
To learn how to create ongoing content when you don't have time to, visit makecontent.today for our free guide.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
$1 billion or invest more money with you. Most people would run away from the idea that they hear somebody from another country and they are managing, you're managing their money. Like, what are they going to say? It's like scary. But what I found is that a lot of times the people in the Philippines who work with me, those individuals have a stronger work ethic. A lot of times they're more appreciative. A lot of times they have reporting ingrained in their system. Mm-hmm. They're going to give you daily updates and keep you in a feedback loop. They're hungry without any expectation for promotion. Mm. It's crazy. It's like a lot of people say, well, I'm not doing this until I get promotion. They do the promoted job while they're in the previous job. Yeah. And because of that, they get promoted. So it's just a different type of ethic because they're used to, you know, it's a still a third world country. So they're used to having to work. And they prefer to work with U.S. based companies and other companies, because if they have to go in office in the Philippines, I went to the Philippines a couple of weeks ago. The traffic is so bad. They might have a 2-hour commute just to get to a 20-minute ride to work. Mm. So imagine 2 hours there working in office and coming 2 hours back. And you're away from your family the whole day. So they're appreciative for the opportunity to work for somebody where they can actually work from home. So
I see. You actually have an agency that helps people learn how to use VAs or employ VAs in their own company?
Well, I haven't announced it yet, but I guess this is the announcement.
Oh, my bad.
Yes. Well, you're the first to know this. So I did. When I went out to the Philippines, I was meeting with my team. I'm from both my companies in the Philippines. And what we ended up doing is we opened up an office and we did a ribbon cutting in Cebu, which is a part of. So there's Manila and Cebu, the two main places. I went to Manila and Cebu. We gathered some people together. I put my leadership team together, and now we have a fully operating office, and we're getting ready to launch the ability to have trained VAs at your disposal to help you to grow your company.
That is so awesome. So I have a team in my own company, obviously U.S.-based. Mm-hmm. I have a few staff members, several staff members, team members that are U.S.-based.
Right.
But I recently went and hired a team of additional overseas employees as mm-hmm. well. And I love all of my team. Mm-hmm. Everybody kind of does what they need to do,
mm-hmm.
but the output.
Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about.
Different. Yeah. Right. My very first assistant back in 2015, maybe 2016
mm-hmm.
was from the Philippines.
Really?
Yeah. And I was so opposed to it. I allowed someone who was coaching me at that time to say, hey, you know, you should use someone from the Philippines or not even just from the Philippines, from anywhere, you know, mm-hmm. kind of overseas. And it's really because they're trained.
Right.
Just like you go to, let's say, Las Vegas, and they're trained for hospitality in areas like that. In Mexico, they're trained for hospitality. In certain parts of the country, they are trained to be of service to U.S.-based companies. And so they spend their time, like, while we're doing math and science and mm-hmm. this and that, they're focused on just this, like wow. just learning how to do ads and just learning how to do these things. And they put these teams together. So that's why the productivity mm-hmm. is like exponential.
Yep.
And then the pay scale is obviously much less than you would pay here in yep. the United States. But at that time, I was so opposed to it, Marvin. Yep. I felt like I'm taking a job away from.
I had that feeling. Yep.
Yeah, I had that feeling. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up letting her go.
Mm.
And I hired a U.S.-based assistant.
Okay.
That didn't work out. And I went through two more U.S.-based assistants that didn't work out. My assistant now is U.S.-based and she's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But I can understand why business owners reach their wits' end.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're working and having to hire staff, train staff, try out staff, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just like, let me just go here where I know
yep.
it's really going to get done.
And if it doesn't work out, which more times than not, it does, it's so much easier to transition a relationship than it is here.
That is true. It is a whole lot easier.
Want me to tell you the biggest mistake that I see people make when they're looking to hire overseas?
Mm.
And, I think the biggest mistake that they make, because we all hear that, well, you can hire somebody for cheap.
Yeah.
You know, you can hire somebody for $4 an hour, yeah. $7 an hour. You can get a really good person. And that is true. You can. But I think people are looking at it the wrong way. So the way I look at it is, if you can hire somebody for such a low wage and they're super productive, imagine the type of quality of the person that you'll get when you pay them
mm-hmm.
a good rate.
Yeah.
So one of my VAs earns like 50 grand a year. Now, to some people, it's like, oh, my God, 50 grand, that's a lot. Actually, I'll tell you a couple of things. 50 grand, but 50 grand, that person is on the leadership team in my U.S.-based company.
Mm-hmm.
She should be getting paid, if it was U.S., 250 grand easily in her executive role. So you can go out and get executive roles where you definitely cannot afford here. I got a COO. I got an integrator. I just hired somebody today for $6,500 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to run my entire sales operational structure and some marketing system operations that you can't get. You can't get that type of person for less than $300,000 in the U.S.
Yeah. And inflation isn't helping.
Right.
Right. The cost of living and everything being more expensive isn't helping mm-hmm. what people who are based in the United States needs to earn.
Yep.
And as a small business owner, we're not always in position to go all in. Like if I have a $100,000 budget, it's mm-hmm. like, do I give 100% of it to one person who needs it here? or can I find me two or three people who are going to work just as hard, if not harder? However, just me, I still struggle a little bit with that, you know, with the ethics of it.
Right.
Meaning I still want to I very much want to employ people in the United States. So in my company, it's still an equal kind of mix. Yeah.
Can I tell you one last thing on how I look at this? So I look at this as me hiring virtual professionals. Mm-hmm. And I call it virtual professionals, not virtual assistant.
Yeah, for sure.
Me hiring virtual professionals will allow my company to grow faster, which allows me to hire more people from the U.S. If I just stuck with the U.S. and my payroll was to a cap, I'm going to be limited on my growth, which means I'm limited to how many people I hire in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So I tell my individuals in the U.S. this all the time because they're fully on board with it. I pay them a lot more than comparables for their jobs. And I let them know that, look, you got a $70,000 job, but I'm paying you $105,000. And the reason why I'm able to do that is because over here, I'm able to hire at this rate for this particular role, and I can have you focusing on more high level things. So they're happier because I gave one of my people a $40,000 raise this year.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that I was able to do that because I kept my payroll lower.
It's balanced.
Yeah, it's balanced.
It's definitely balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you have to do to build your business for sure.
You got to.
How'd you get into this financial space? Because either what I've learned about or what I've observed about financial education is you're either very into it or you're very bored with it.
Right.
Right. How did you get into the space of saying, you know what, this is important and I want to build a business in this area?
Okay. So a couple interesting things. So first, I never thought I would go into finances. Right. I was actually broke growing up. My mom had me when she was 15. We grew up in the slums of St. Louis, the hood of St. Louis. My dad wasn't around. He was in jail my whole life. In fact, I think he's still in jail. He's been in and out like my whole life. I keep in touch with him from time to time. But we struggled. I had two younger sisters. We were homeless. We lived in a shelter for a certain point in my life. So we grew up like not having anything. My grandmother played a huge role in helping out my mom, I love her to death. Like, she was very close. I'm still very close to my mom. My grandmother, she stepped in, and when we were in the shelter, she found out where we were. She pulled us into her small home. And when she did that, she was a very strong Christian woman. So she would always tell me things such as, you can do all things through Christ who strengthens you. She would tell me, don't let the outcomes of your life, don't let the circumstances of your life dictate the outcomes of your life. Mm-hmm. And because of her pouring into me, I believe she's a big reason why I'm the first person in my family to attend college. So I went to college, although I'm not a big fan of college now, but that's a whole nother story. So I went to college. After graduating from college, I actually attended law school.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So I told you there's a lot of things you don't know about me. Now, law school, I didn't stay in law school long, unfortunately, because my grandmother became sick with cancer. So I was in Texas. I moved back to St. Louis to take care of my grandmother. And my grandmother, her biggest fear was actually being a burden on the family. She was one of those strong, independent women, like the soul food grandma, where everybody came around my grandmother. It was crazy. She was definitely the rock in our family. So she was strong, independent, and she could not see herself like not being that way. So as she became weaker, I remember she told her financial advisor that she don't want to be a burden. She can't lose any of her money. She need to keep it safe. That financial advisor, and by the way, she made me her durable power of attorney because I had an education, which means that I was responsible for looking after her finances when she was sick. But unfortunately, she lost 50% of her money when the stock market declined. She had no long-term care insurance, so the rest of her money was depleted on medical expenses. She ended up having to qualify for Medicaid, and she ended up passing away feeling like she was a burden, having very little life insurance. And really, it just made me realize that I needed to change this. I needed to be a generational curse breaker. So I became really obsessed with learning everything that I could about finances at that time. So I started my career at a big financial firm in St. Louis. You probably heard of it, Edward Jones.
For sure.
So I was at Edward Jones and I was drinking the Kool-Aid, right? Because I was helping people out. They put me in charge of my first year of training new FAs. I was doing really good. And keep in mind, I was up to the point in 3 years, I was making six figures. Grew up poor. I was like 22, 23, making six figures, doing well. But I remember one of my first clients came to see me. This was like 5 years into my time at Edward Jones. They were saying, like, I want to keep my money safe. And this lady was like 60, 65. And I said, well, because I'm brainwashed now. I was like, well, you're in the market. Hang in there. You're in it for the long haul. It's going to go down. It's only a paper loss. Stick in there. And she looked me in the eye and said, I don't think you understand. I don't want to be a burden on my family. I cannot not afford to lose any of this money. And when she said that, it's like I saw my grandma, yeah. Right? I was like, this is my chance to get it right this time. Mm-hmm. So I made this client's money safer. And this lady turned out to be like a psychic because the stock market dipped like that next week. It started going straight down. But I got reprimanded by the company because I didn't sell, because it wasn't the products that they wanted me to. They were more worried about why I took a lot of her money out of these aggressive funds that cost the firm revenue than the fact that we just saved this lady from losing 30% of her money.
Right.
And when that happened, like my conscience didn't sit well and I had to leave that company. Although I was making six figures, it was tough, mm-hmm. but I decided to walk away. And when I walked away, that's when I started my own company. And it turned out to be a blessing in disguise because it was tough. Like that first year, I felt like, you know how when the children were going through the wilderness after they left Egypt?
Yeah.
And they were just like, well, at least I had food back when I was in Egypt, even though we was persecuted. I was like that. I was like, at least I was able to pay my bills and everything was good. I didn't have an $80 check in a month. But it turned out to be great. Now I'm like one of the top 1% advisors in the country. I've written several books. I'm on the news. I'm on radio. And I'm able to travel around the world and train thousands of advisors all around the world. It just kind of worked out. But none of it was my plan. It was just like God unveiling his plan step by step by step in my life.
Yeah.
And then the last thing, now how I actually became more known in the space was actually I give credit to this podcast space. Mm-hmm. It was when Shans interviewed me on Social Proof, mm-hmm. and that thing just blew up. And I hated insurance. Like, even though I'm in the financial field, mm-hmm. I did not like talking about insurance. I thought it was the scariest thing. Nobody wants to be around an insurance agent. They'll run from it if you're in a networking event. But when I started talking about it, because I had a question about it, it started going crazy. And like, I was getting thousands of messages. I went from like 2,000 followers. Now I got like 160,000 followers. It just started going crazy. And I realized that people in our community don't have this information.
Yeah.
And I had been doing it for 10 years and I thought that people knew, but people just didn't know about this information. And that's
why don't we know? Why don't we know about financial education and tips and strategies to save and protect our money?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Or the value and importance of life insurance. Why don't mm-hmm. we know?
Well, a couple of reasons. Number one, a lot of times we're not at the table. Mm-hmm. So we don't hear the backroom conversations. And in our culture, money wasn't just talked about freely. You don't just sit at the table talking about how much money is in the bank account and how much life insurance you have mm-hmm. and all of those things. So that's number one. Number two, we're not paying mentors and coaches and financial advisors to give us this information. And if they can go talk to somebody in their own culture who has five times more money, why are they going to leave and talk to us? So, and then the last third thing is, if we're counting on the educational system and your job market and the government to teach us about money, there's an entire agenda around that. The government doesn't want you to know these things, because if you knew how to put money into a place where you wouldn't have to pay taxes on it again, that would take money away from the big Wall Street 401k companies and IRAs. And because of that, they would lose billions of dollars in revenue. So the educational system is not teaching you about financial literacy. The government definitely is not teaching you about financial literacy. They just want to tax you. And you're not paying anybody and getting mentored and coached on what wealthy people are doing. So when I actually left Edward Jones and I started my business, I said something has to change. Something needs to be different. I started to, even though I was a financial advisor, I started to invest like literally tens of thousands of dollars into people who were not even financial advisors because they had the results. Mm-hmm. And what they taught me, they said, you've been doing it all wrong. You've been advising people the wrong way for all of these years. And if you keep doing that, not only will they be broke and run out of money, but you'll be broke and run out of money.
Yeah. In our culture specifically.
Right.
When we are having conversations about money, it mm-hmm. is, you know, go to school, get a great job, make as much money as you can. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing terribly wrong with that model. We've just proven that there are other ways to.
Right.
But when it comes to money, even I was taught, I remember my mom taking me to the bank to open my very first savings account. Mm-hmm. And I used to be so proud to deposit like my $5 a week right. to go in there and save this money. But then there were bank fees mm-hmm. that, you know, you keep an account under a certain balance, they're going to charge you.
Right.
So now I'm getting, and I didn't understand at that time, but much later in life, I understand like the savings system, especially when you are promoting that to a community of people who already don't have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It's almost scammy, mm-hmm. right? Saying, hey, take your $5, put it in the bank, and we are going to charge you X amount mm-hmm. of dollars. And at that time, it's like $15 or whatever that looks like per month. So now you have this account where it's dwindling down right. over and over and over again. And you just are a couple of months before you hit that NSF charge or mm-hmm. that, you know, that under account balance fee, whatever it is. Saving is, to me, only saving mm-hmm. is a dangerous mindset mm-hmm. to have. What are your thoughts about that?
You can't save your way to wealth. Mm-hmm. You just can't. Again, the banks love it, but mm-hmm. it's not to your benefit. There's three different types of people when it comes to money. You have a debtor who rely on credit cards and debt. You have a saver who relies on the banks. And then you have a wealth creator, which relies on investment. So they all work and operate differently. They don't know they do, though. The debtor, they're going into debt and then they're paying it off. And then they go into debt again, they're paying it off. These are the individuals that seems like they're just in a rat race, right? Because it seems like they take one step forward, then they take two steps back. They can't get ahead. In fact, these people, they just say, if I can simply just get to debt free, I'll feel relieved and I'll be okay. But the problem is that is your only goal. Even if you do get to debt free, guess what? You're still at zero.
Debt free isn't the goal.
Debt free can't be the goal because debt will actually help you to build wealth. So you can't just be thinking that my only goal is debt free and then you end up with nothing. You have to figure out a way how to grow and get bad debt taken care of at the same time. Because there are homeless people on the street that have no debt, mm-hmm. but they also have no assets. That doesn't mean they're in a better situation than you are.
That's right? A really good point.
The saver, this is the second step. This is a phase up. But what they're doing is they're saving. And then they're paying cash. Then they're going to do it again, save, and then they pay cash. The problem with that, although it sounds good, is that every time they save and they pay cash, they're stopping their forward momentum of money, which means that that money they just spent is gone. They got to build it back up before they start making interest on that again. Mm-hmm. Although they're not in debt, they still keep getting closer to that same zero line yeah. every time that they pay cash. You finance everything that you buy. You're either going to pay somebody else a fee to use their money or you're losing the interest that you would have made had you kept your own. Either way, you end up in the same place. So the wealth creator, this is what I learned from those millionaire mentors that I met. The wealth creators, they find a way to never stop the forward momentum of money. Their money only goes up. So you might be wondering, like, how does money only go up when you still have expenses? Because when they make a major purchase, what they're going to do is they're going to use their own money as leverage. and they're going to borrow against their money while their money continues to grow uninterrupted, tax-free, like they never touched it. They're going to go out and potentially buy an asset. That asset now is going to make them money two times off the same dollar because they're making money off the asset that they get, and they're still making money off their own money that they leveraged against. Now they're using multiple assets to make money. Mm-hmm. And this is the power on how people can make their money work four times off the same dollar mm-hmm. when you know these methods and how it works.
We're talking about wealth. Most yes. people are just getting by.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that part of the misinformation mm-hmm. or the disconnect is like all we're focused on is wealth, wealth, wealth. If you're not wealthy, though, that individual feels like this conversation doesn't apply to them.
Yeah. And thank you for that. And that is what, so here's what I think. I think people feel like the system has failed them. Mm-hmm. People feel like, even if they really didn't, people still feel like the system has failed them because they were told this. They were told to go to school, get an education, get student loans, get a job. When you get a job, then you can pay off your student loans and then you can finally start making money. But then you got people who are flooded in student loans. They're putting money into a 401k that they can't even touch until they're 59 and a half. They have no savings. So when an emergency comes up, they have to liquidate the 401k, which is a penalty, which is taxes, which takes 30 to 40% because of one liquidation. Mm-hmm. And now they're starting all the way back over again, and they keep doing the same thing over and over. Then if they lose their job, they have to liquidate the rest of it. And so they're feeling like this system that I'm in is broke and the government is taking advantage of me because they're penalizing me when I have something that happened to me that I can't control. Mm-hmm. Right. And then if I do keep working until I'm 65, then I can finally use my retirement money to live my lifestyle. And then the problem with that is taxes are going to go up, which means the government's going to get more money. You're going to get less because you were never in control to begin with. The government set up a system that they can always control your money. So people need new information and new systems and new hope. Mm. So that's what I do when I come and I say, look, I know that you were told this way. But you have to think about doing this a different way because the three-legged stool no longer exists. You were told to go to work, saving your 401k. You're going to get Social Security. You're going to get a pension. Pensions are not around anymore like they used to be. Mm-hmm. Social Security Administration said that Social Security is going to be out of funds by 2034. So now that's one leg left. You can't balance yourself on a one-leg stool. And if the market crashed, now that leg is gone. So you're laying flat on your face. So when I tell people new hope, I say, hey, we got to start with this. You need to make sure that you're solid on from a foundational standpoint first, which means we got to make sure that you get out of bad debt, that you build an emergency fund, and we got to make sure that you expedite paying off that debt in a way that nobody has taught you before.
But if I am right now making $20 an hour,
mm-hmm.
I've got $25,000 worth of bad debt plus current yep. bills. How do I ever get out of the bad debt?
So the first thing is you have to realize that we can always look and say, well, this is all I have. I like reading the Bible for principles. So the Bible says those who are faithful with little will be blessed with more.
Yeah.
If you're not taking that $20 an hour and doing the basic principles, you're not going to do it when you get more. That's why a lot of my millionaire friends still end up broke. Because they never followed the systems to begin with. So we just got to focus on principles. So the principle is you need to be saving at least 10% of your income.
Okay.
Most people are not. The average person is saving less than 2% of their income. So if I'm making $20 an hour and my check is $1,500, even if it's for the whole month, I need to be saving $150. That's my gross income. Mm-hmm. Now, once I do that, then I'm going to start to build on that. The second thing I know I need to do is I need to start getting out of bad debt. Even if I'm making a little bit of money, I know I need to get out of debt. So there is something that's called the debt snowball effect. Mm-hmm. And the debt snowball is simply paying off that card with the lowest balance first so you can get some momentum. Once you pay off that card with the lowest balance, you then look at the next balance and then you snowball that. But if you want to super speed that, even for people who are not making hundreds of thousands of dollars, you can actually start a policy because you need life insurance anyway.
Okay.
You can start a policy, put your money into that policy, pay yourself first, which means before I pay bills, before I even pay taxes all the way, let me first pay myself first, which means I'm going to put a portion of that check into a life insurance policy that's properly structured. when I put my money into that policy, I can then borrow against that policy after only 30 days and start debt snowballing and paying off that debt. Now what I'm going to do is my debt is getting paid off while I'm building wealth. If you do it the first way, my debt is getting paid off, but I have nothing to show for it. I'm broke. Now I can pay off my debt and I'm building wealth at the same time. So you can't afford to choose. You can't afford to choose if I'm going to pay off my debt or build wealth. You're broke. You need to do both. Yeah. You need to pay off your debt and build wealth.
And it sounds good. Mm-hmm. But if this person mm-hmm. has rent to pay, mm-hmm. paying myself first,
right?
I'm a mother or he's a father. Yep. We've got bills to pay. It's scary to say, no, I'm still going to take this 10% and mm-hmm. do something with it over here.
It's very scary, but at the same time, it's also very scary to end up in your same situation 3 years from now that you are today.
Ooh.
So you cannot keep doing the exact same thing and expecting a different result. The definition of insanity is doing the exact same thing and expecting a different result. At some point, you got to make that jump that's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You got to stretch yourself. Growth only comes by stretching yourself. Mm-hmm. If you are afraid to make that first move and stretch yourself, then you're going to be back to where you started, which is not in a good place.
Yeah.
So at some point you have to say, if I got to sell products, if I got to downsize my apartment and live in a smaller apartment, whatever I have to do to make sure I can start setting something aside for myself.
Yeah.
This is not just for me. This is for my family. This is for your kids. I want my great, great grandkids to say, because of the decisions that my great, great grandmother did, because of what my great, great grandfather decided to do, our family has taken off in a new trajectory. Yeah. Somebody has to be that sacrificial lamb. Somebody has to be the first one in our family that starts making different decisions. Why not you?
Yeah, that's powerful. So essentially, you're saying not just take this 10% off. Mm-hmm. We still have to live. But while simultaneously saving this 10%, taking this 10%, putting it away, you have to figure out a way how to cut your current expenses in real time.
Yeah. One of the things that I have all of my mentees do the first week that they're in the program is do an expense audit. And what they do is they print out their last 3 months of statements mm-hmm. and we do a highlighter, and we're going to separate your fixed expenses versus your variable expenses. Mm-hmm. And what we find, almost everybody find hundreds of dollars a month. I don't care how much money they have, they find hundreds of dollars a month. I'll give you an example. I was paying $230 a month for my cell phone. I was able to go to a company that was able to give me the same unlimited services with the same Verizon tower. It wasn't called Verizon, for $29 a month.
That's crazy.
That saved me a couple hundred dollars. That one thing. Another thing is, a lot of people have these cable companies, DirecTV, but you're not even looking at all the channels. You can go to something that can save you $50, $60 a month utilizing that. And then you can have these companies compete for your service. So every one of these companies that have reoccurring payments, they have a retention department. That retention department is to retain your business, exactly what it's called. Mm-hmm. So when you go, and you have to be serious about this, but when you're threatening to go with another company, they're going to send you to that retention department. And in that department, they're going to negotiate down. So that's what you do. The first thing we want to do is we want to look at the expenses that are fixed. How many subscriptions are you paying for today that you don't even use, and you don't even know it because you're not even checking it? Those subscriptions, right?
I have to audit my subscriptions like quarterly.
Exactly.
Yeah, because, you know, Apple will get you with sign up for this 7-day trial. I have so many $2.99s mm-hmm. and $7.99s coming out of my, and you don't know what you're paying for.
Yep.
So every quarter, I'm old school.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the apps are apping and all of that right. stuff, but I have a Google spreadsheet.
I love it.
I print out my last 3 months' bank statements, and I put everything that hits that account.
Mm-hmm.
And I am always, always looking for a way to reduce expenses. I don't care if it just gets me $400 back in my pocket a month. I am always looking for a way to reduce expenses.
You're good. I mean, you are the most systematic person. Like, you are gifted when it comes to being able to see the big picture in the small things at the same time. Yeah. Usually you only got one. You're a unicorn on that nature.
Thank you.
So three things for people who are really looking to, who have made bad decisions in the past and you're looking to turn it around.
Hey, entrepreneur, are you looking for mentorship? Do you ever watch me here on the Social Proof Podcast or on Full Transparency and say, you know what? One day I want to work with Donnie. Great news. You absolutely can. Join me inside my community, Actionable CEO, where we help to develop new habits, grow you personally, professionally, and financially, help you take massive action in your business, ultimately helping you make more money. It's just $97 a month. We meet every single week. We have a book club. We do live co-working sessions. When I'm in your city, you guys get to connect with me in person and so much more. Don't take my word for it. Go over to actionableceo.com. Check out the page and see if it's a good fit for you. If so, I'll see you on the inside.
The first one is I love when I started getting disciplined with my finances, I wasn't great. I started using the envelope system.
Yes.
The envelope system, let me tell you, that changed my life. And what I did was I took out several envelopes and I wrote each category, whether it be haircut, whether it be entertainment, ties. Like groceries. Everything, groceries, mm-hmm. I took it all out and I wrote it, the title on it. And every time I would spend from, and I would take all the cash out, put it, divide it in those envelopes. Every time I would spend the cash, I would write what I spent on that envelope. You did that too?
I did it too.
And then let me tell y'all, what the challenge comes in is when one of them gets low and you have to choose on which bucket am I going to take this money from? Mm-hmm. Cause I got to steal from another category. Now, if you live in a hood, be careful. Don't be walking around with a bunch of envelopes and cash. You got to be smart and strategic. So I did it when I was in the hood. Probably not the best decision, but it worked, right? Some of y'all might want to use companies like Mint.com or Personal Capital, but it's something about that envelope because when you use cash, you spend 30% less. Plastic makes you spend more. The second thing that I did is I didn't want to like turn off my credit cards because it would hurt my utilization rate and it would hurt my credit score. But what I did was I put a credit card in a sandwich bag and filled it with water and I put it in the freezer. And when it froze, every time I wanted to use that credit card, I had to unthaw that. And by the time it unthawed, I decided that I really didn't want to make that purchase to begin with,
yeah.
Which brings me to the third point. This is called the 24-hour rule. The 24-hour rule is anytime I want to make a big purchase, kind of out of impulse, I would say, no, you know what? 24 hours, I'm still going to want this. I would actually set my alarm and put the item in there and put 24 hours. And when it went off, if I still had the same desire to buy it, I would still buy it. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, that desire went away and you realize that how often we just act on impulse.
Yeah.
Because finances is really habits. All you're doing, same way with eating habits, finances and fitness go hand in hand. You're just changing your habits one small decision at a time. And that's what I'll do if I'm the person that's only making 20 hours. Now, once you get your expenses good and under control, by the way, I don't like calling it a budget. I don't like that word. I call it a spending plan. Because I feel like words have power. And by me saying limited words like budget, I'm inviting a scarcity mindset into my finances.
Well,
but when I say spending plan, now I'm in control of it. I get to tell my money exactly where it's to go. So when I get that taken care of, the next thing is I realize how can I make extra income? Because eventually you're going to have to start making some extra income. Mm-hmm. Is it a side business? Am I going to just go get a raise right away? What am I going to do to start making some extra money? Because you have to do both, decrease your expenses, but increase your income.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And let me tell you something. There's something so powerful because sometimes we talk in such long words, mm-hmm. or big strategies, that someone who's sitting in the middle of like a real situation with, mm-hmm. not a lot of access to a lot, it just really goes over the head.
Right.
That envelope method.
Oh, my God.
When you see that envelope getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, it does something to
right.
you. And then when you see that envelope get smaller and smaller and smaller, it does a different thing to you. And for me, when I would see my envelopes get smaller and smaller, I had to figure out how to make more money. I just couldn't rely on what I was doing in my 9-to-5.
Mm-hmm.
I was eager because I remember that feeling, that adrenaline, that rush that I experienced from seeing the envelope grow bigger and bigger.
Right.
That the down was like, I got to put some more money in my envelope. So now that opens your mindset up
yep.
to now saying, how can I make more money?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's your side hustles or whatever it is that you have to do to be able to do this. The other, I believe, misconception is that life insurance costs a whole lot of money and right. they can't afford it.
Well, can I take a couple minutes to explain to you more about life insurance than most people know about life insurance in a short amount of time? Because we've all heard about maybe term insurance. Term insurance is good. Let's say you got a lot of debt and you need to have something. You got younger kids and you need to cover yourself for that short amount of time. Term is good. But my problem with the industry is people who do term, they badmouth permanent. And people who do permanent, they badmouth term.
Yeah.
Like, no, it all serves a purpose. And I think it's crazy that we're debating about something that we can do it all.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I have term,
mm-hmm.
but I also have whole life and mm-hmm. I also have index universal life. So this is how it works. So when you buy life insurance, there's a minimum amount that you can put into a life insurance policy. And then there's a maximum amount that you can put into a life insurance policy.
Okay.
The insurance companies determines the least amount that you can put into that policy because they have what's called actuaries that actually determines how they can make a profit off of your money. The maximum amount, believe it or not, is determined by not the insurance company. It's determined by the government. Mm-hmm. So why would the government be concerned about how much money a person puts into a life insurance policy?
Taxes.
Mm-hmm. So what do you mean? Well, millionaires back in the days, they would dump tons of money into life insurance because now it's forever gone from the IRS. It's tax deferred and never have to pay any taxes on it. When they take the money out and use it for income, it's tax free. And when they die, it goes to their beneficiaries tax free. So they would use this as a leveraging plan. So the government didn't want to take that rule away because they wanted to still use it, but they wanted to change it for ordinary people. So what they did was they put a line in the sand and they called it a MEC. MEC means modified endowment contract. That simply means that if you go over a certain amount that you put into that policy, now it's taxable. So what the government did in the 1980s to stop people from putting all of this tax-free money into the policy, they formed 401ks, IRAs, thrift savings plans, because before the 80s, everybody saved in insurance.
Got you.
So that's why your grandparents and stuff like that's why they love life insurance.
They got their life insurance.
They got their life insurance because that's all you can do back then.
Yes.
So then they did this big promotion where they promoted. Now they're educating you to put it into your 401k. Now, if you have a match on a 401k, that's good because they're giving you free money. But get this. Let's just say, Donnie, you came to me and you said, Marvin, I need to borrow $10,000. Mm-hmm. Now, we know each other now, so maybe you wouldn't think this. But if we just met and I just said, Donnie, $10,000, no problem. Here's $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Before you take that $10,000 loan, what are two things you're going to want to know before leaving with that money?
That I'm going to, when do I need to pay it back? And is there any interest?
What's the interest rate and when do I have to pay it back?
Mm-hmm.
What if I said, Donnie, that's a crazy question. Don't even worry about that. I know what the interest is going to be, but I'll let you know down the line when I need my money. And at that time, I'm going to charge you retroactively to the day that you gave me the loan. And I don't know when I want it back, but when I do request it back, if you don't give it back, I'll penalize you 50% of that money. But go ahead and take this loan.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
No.
What if I said that most people have already taken that loan and they don't realize it? When you overfund your 401k, think about it. You don't know what taxes are going to be when you take that money out. The government can raise the interest rates and they're going to charge you taxes retroactively on that money since the first day that you put the money into that account. Secondly, there's something that's called required minimum distributions, which means that they're going to force you to start taking money out of that account eventually because they want their tax money. And if you fail to pay it back on time when they want the money, they're going to penalize your account 50% and still charge you the taxes on that account anyway. So that is the type of account the government wants to give you. Remember, the government's never going to give you something without having an agenda and without taking something else away. So by knowing that, we realize that, do I really want to overfund and put all of my money into these retirement plans? Now, there are Roth options like Roth 401ks that can be tax-free on the back end or Roth IRAs, but most people are not even doing those options. So now that we know that, we have to realize that the minimum amount, let's just say I can put in $500 into a policy, that's the minimum, or $10,000, and that's the maximum. Why in the heck would I put in $10,000 when I could have put in $500? Because when you put in a minimum, that's term insurance. The only benefit to term is the death benefit. If the death benefit expires, you no longer have any insurance, and hopefully you can qualify based on your health and based on your age. Insurance companies make most of their money off of term because 98% are never executed. The permanent policies, they make less money. When you put more money and you fund it the right way, structure it the right way, by doing so, that extra money is going to go to your cash value. And when you structure that policy, you want to structure it for the lowest amount of death benefit and the highest amount of cash value. Now, most agents, 90% of people won't do it that way. You know why? Commissions. They get 70% more commissions when they structure it for more death benefit. And it's hard to get a man.
Come on. How do we know?
Hold on. It's hard to get a man to understand something that their wallet depends on them not understanding. So they're not going to tell you. So how you know is you have to make sure it's structured the right way. And when it's structured the right way, you're going to get tax-free benefits, the ability to borrow from it. You're going to get safety. You're going to get the ability to pay back the loan when you want to pay back the loan, which means if you don't pay it back, it's subtracted from the death benefit when you die. You're going to get all of these extra benefits, like the ability to access your money before you're 59 and a half and use it for real estate and use it for paying off debt and use it for school, whatever you want to use it for. You have this ability where your 401k is imprisoned until you're 59 and a half. So since most people don't do it, this is why we have a company that shows people how to do it.
Yeah, because my question is, as you're talking, I'm thinking, well, this is why people take their 401k so much more seriously.
Exactly.
Because there literally is a breakdown, right? And your 401k is the 401k is the 401k. It's not many variables you can do with your 401k, and people understand it.
Right.
But now when we start talking about insurance and you think you're doing the right thing, but you now are talking to an agent who's more concerned about their commission than they are concerned with protecting your life and your assets, now it's like, okay, I don't know who to trust. So let me just keep putting my money in a 401k and in my savings account, right? People don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they think they're doing the right thing until they actually need to access this money.
Yeah.
Borrow against this money. You just don't know. How do you know that you're dealing with a great insurance agent?
Well, sometimes you don't, and that's the sad part about it. So that's why it's so important to know that you're working with the company, because a lot of these people think they have structured their policy the way I mentioned it, but then their cash value hasn't grown in 3 to 5 years, and you have to make sure. But studying, like coming to classes, getting your intelligence up, coming to, like, you know, I do like 5-day challenges and different workshops to educate people on how to look at the policies and how to determine how it's structured to determine if it's right for you. I have an insurance agency where I have agents that are trained on this, that they help people to recognize a good policy and a bad policy, and they help them to know how to borrow against it and make their money continue to grow. So if you're not going out to get the education, you're basically stuck on what somebody else is telling you with potentially a hidden agenda. And that's unfortunate. Not every agent, not every advisor has the same morals. And sometimes it's not that the advisor has bad morals and integrity. Sometimes they just don't know either.
Yeah.
And they don't know, because why would the big Wall Street companies and big insurance companies train all of their agents how to make 70% less in commission when they're in a for-profit business? You see what I'm saying?
That makes a ton of sense. Does your company, is there a thing, and maybe your company does this, I don't know, where you can talk to people and audit what they have?
Oh, definitely.
And offer them advice on, oh no, you've got something great, or no, let's improve this.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, we do complimentary consultations to help people with that all the time, and to help them to set up better policies, or to help them to set up a new policy if they never had one. Can I give that site?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, it's on wealthcreationcall.com.
Wealthcreationcall, C-A-L-L.
Yep, wealthcreationcall.com. You can actually schedule a time to meet with my team. We have 7 trained agents. All they do is look for opportunities to help you each and every day.
But then we're really just tipping the iceberg when it comes to insurance, because Typically, someone who is interested in life insurance, mm-hmm. They are interested in protecting their assets.
Right.
And they are interested in protecting their future. Right. Mm. They also don't want to be a burden.
Right.
Like you said. So they're very future conscious.
Right.
That same person would be a good candidate for now understanding what a trust is.
Oh, I knew you were going to go there. Right.
And it's just one strategy after the other strategy. And it's like, do you need them all? Do I need just one?
Well, you know, one of the things that I did to really get known in this space for insurance and my industry, I'm keynote speakers all the time, is that I found a way to make talking about finances fun. Mm-hmm. Right. Life insurance could be such a dull conversation, and most people only buy it because it's a need.
Yeah.
You know, somebody dies and they're like, oh, you got to get your life insurance. Don't count on fish fries and GoFundMe. Get you some life insurance. So I don't feel bad. I'm just going to go get some life insurance because the minimum just to say I got it.
Yeah.
And I'm not ever going to know anything about trusts or anything like that. I just want to do the bare minimum. But we made it a want. Like, I want to protect my assets. I want to put more money into it. So I was able to make life insurance fun, and I'll go back to the trust in a second, but I was able to make life insurance fun because I found a way to borrow against my policy. I bought my home in Atlanta off borrowing from my policy that I rent out, and it makes me money. It was a $2 million house. I don't even live in Atlanta. I was able to borrow from my policy to buy options. I made $300,000 in a day by trading options. And if I didn't pay it back, if I lost that trade, my money would still continue to grow as if I never touched it. And it would simply be subtracted from my death benefit plus interest when I died. Mm-hmm. I've been able to, you know, hard money lending. People were paying 16% for hard money loans. I was able to say, well, if they're doing 16% and all they're doing is they're writing collateral where if they don't pay them back, they would take their house. I can do the same thing. I charged 12%. But now while they were paying me back, my insurance account was still growing as if I never touched it.
Yeah.
I borrowed to get a Lamborghini. Now, granted, is that a liability or an asset?
It depends
on what you're using it for. I was going to make it into an asset and rent it out, but I couldn't just rent out my green Lamborghini. Mm-hmm. So what I ended up doing was I just had it. And 27 people in one day said, do you have a mentorship? What are you doing? And because of that, I was able to make enough to pay off my Lamborghini just by having it. So I made it fun. So when you learn to make it fun, now you want to know how do you protect all the assets that you made it fun with? That's where trust comes in. You want to make sure that if you pass away, your family isn't going through probate and you're not having arguments in the family on who thinks they should get what and who thinks they should get what. You want it all detailed. You want it all written out. And also you want to protect yourself from frivolous lawsuits. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that you have everything out of your name. You want to own nothing and control everything. That means that I don't want it in my name. I'm technically broke. All of my money is owned by this entity, which is not me. So you have to sue that entity, and that entity is bulletproof. That is the power of a trust. And people don't know about that. They think that even if they have a will, that their assets are protected, but wills don't avoid probate. Mm-hmm. So like in my mentorship, that's one of the things we do. When you come in that first month in a mentorship, you get a trust included.
You get a trust.
Yeah, we do the trust. We do trust in my mentorship.
Mm-hmm. How much does getting a trust normally cost? Like just
between a good trust, somewhere between $4,500 on the low end, $9,000 on the high end.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So $4,500 to $9,000, and then just hypothetically, a mentorship program with you would the investment for that would be somewhere around what?
Well, we just increased our price, but up until recently, it was like $12,000.
So literally, the people who work with you in mentorship.
Yeah, they're getting that a $6,000 value because we have more expanded trust. We have the more detailed trust. They're getting that. They're getting a 1 year mentorship where I talk to them every week. We do Q&As. I help them out. They also get to learn how to trade options to multiply that money. They learn how to find the money that they're losing and they don't know they're losing it. Maybe it's in their expenses. Mm-hmm. If they're overfunding their 401k, if they're paying for their house the wrong way, they get help minimizing their taxation. I mean, quite frankly, I get robbed because I really want to help people in these individual situations. But for people who can't even afford that, or for people who just want to get started to see like, how do I learn all of these concepts? But maybe I want to do it myself, or maybe I just want to see if this guy is legit and he can really help me. We do something on a small scale called a 5-day challenge where people can pay as little as $97, as much as $397 to sit with me for 5 days and learn all of these concepts and learn how to apply it.
Yeah, and I know that you do those regularly. In full transparency, I am Marvin's executive business consultant, so I do want to say that ethically, right? But as I'm thinking, as I'm listening to you, even talking, listening to this person who just kind of wants to get their feet wet and just have an understanding, right? I'm even thinking about messaging, because we don't really speak to the person who really doesn't have it, right? And you do a lot with helping people create passive income strategies.
Right.
And so we don't have a lot of messaging out there for that person who feels like that conversation is not for me because I don't have any extra money. And that's something to think about. Yeah. I think you could speak to a whole lot more people if we definitely reminded people or educated them in the first place on the fact that it doesn't matter what tax bracket or income bracket you're in. 100% of the people who are walking this planet who qualify for life insurance need to have life insurance.
Right. And you just reminded me, as my executive coach, that we do have the challenge, which is 5 days.
No dates, because they keep happening over and over and over.
Right, no date, which is 5 days. And you can check that out, wealthdomination.com. You can put that on your site. That's wealthdomination.com, and you can get you a ticket for that. But for people who are just like, I'm just trying to get my feet wet, the challenge is a good place to start. But we also now have a community.
Oh, yeah.
We have a community for people who can just be around the conversations. And that's as low as like $90-something a month.
And I think the ultimate point here is just getting in the room.
Yeah, right? Get in the room.
Getting in the room with people that you vibe with, whether it's Marvin or somebody else. What you should have gotten from this episode is that life insurance is an absolute necessity.
It is.
Right? Yeah. You have to have it. There are some automatic disqualifiers for life insurance, though. What are some of those things?
Yeah. So you have certain health ailments. Like if you've had, a lot of people think they're automatically disqualified if they have cancer. But if it's 10 years ago, they can't report that legally on your statement. So you can still get life insurance. But if you currently have that, for example, if you have high blood pressure and cholesterol at the same time, and it's a lot of diabetes all at the same time. Now, one of them, maybe even two, but if you have all of those things at the same time, it's tough to get approved. And I'll tell you, the way that these rules are written in the African-American community, more African-Americans are disqualified because the rules are not written in the favor for health requirements. It's what they do is they take things that are typically African-Americans suffer from, and they make that a hard grading scale. Well, but things that other industries struggle with, it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of that things that you do have to work on in the industry. But one of the things I will say is just because you can't get approved for life insurance doesn't mean you can't make life insurance work for you. So there are situations where I've had people who couldn't get approved, but they wanted to use it for their life and not just for their death. It's called life insurance, not death insurance. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to be able to use a life insurance to borrow from it tax-free and to multiply their assets and to pay off debt faster. So it is possible for you to be the owner and control the policy, but have somebody else be the insured. Like you can write life insurance on your child, although you own it and you control all of the cash value. And then you can make whoever you want to be, whoever you want to be the beneficiary. Mm. Right. So you can technically have, I'm the owner, somebody else is the insured, which means it's on their life, and somebody else is the beneficiary that when this person dies, it goes to them. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to be all the same. So we get a lot of people who can't get approved, but they still have life insurance. They own it, but they write it on somebody else.
And that's completely legal, completely ethical.
Completely legal, completely ethical. And then you can even have the trust own the insurance policy as well.
So you can leverage it, obviously, if you're getting it on a family member or a spouse.
Yep.
In the event that they die, you took out the policy on them and you're able to cover their death benefits. But can you also access any of it and utilize it for life benefit?
Definitely. That's the whole point.
On another person.
Even though that other person is the insured, if I own it and I'm paying the premiums, I'm able to control the cash buildup. So I can take loans. I can borrow against it. I can buy assets. I can pay it back. I can do all of those things. And I can do it even though the insurance isn't on my life because I own the policy.
Okay. Can you get an insurance policy on somebody without them knowing?
Technically, yes. Would I say it's ethical? No, but I can't because it's not ethical, because what you would have to do is that person would have to get sign off on it, the medical records, and they would have to. So a lot of things, you don't need medical records. So on some younger people, you don't need medical records. So technically you could do it, but I wouldn't say it's ethical because
I wonder
you do,
if it's anybody out here with a life insurance policy on me.
You know what? I hope not, because we need you around for a long time.
We need me around. But I asked that question. That was inspired by a movie, because, you know, sometimes the plot of the movies is like you killed that person for that life insurance policy.
That happens.
I be sitting there thinking, though, like, didn't they need to get a physical?
Yeah.
I had to get a physical, but maybe it was because I got my policy probably around 39, 40.
When I got my policy, one of my largest policies that I got, I didn't need a physical. It was all electronic. I got approved within 3 days. Yeah. Now, there were some policies that I've had to get a physical. There are some I had to get an EKG. But for the most part, I get people approved all the time without a physical. What they do is they have something called LexisNexis. I don't know all this technology behind the scenes, but they can scan your medical records electronically and know
what you're
that
doing.
You're good. And they'll have some Q&As that they can ask you.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
But I will tell people this. You know how a lot of people take these sleep apnea tests. They have trouble sleeping. So they'll go to the doctor and just get tested for it. I will tell you this. That is one of the big reasons why I see a lot of people get declined. Because for whatever reason, even if you got tested for it, it causes the underwriter's suspicion. So my recommendation is, if you are having any trouble sleeping, before you go get any kind of sleep apnea test, make sure you get your life insurance first.
Get your life insurance. And does it work similarly with like ADHD diagnosis and things like that, or not so much?
Not as much, but they do take a look at that.
Yeah. Yeah. So get your life insurance first before you go ringing the alarm on some kind of medical
And you know
condition.
What we see all the time? We see people put things, doctors are put things on people's medical records all the time that didn't happen. And we have to fight, because the client was like, they come back disapproved and they said, I didn't have that. I didn't go to the doctor during this time. And then they go back and a doctor made some kind of error and they had to take it off, and we've been able to get people approved. So make sure you're watching what people are putting on your medical records and you're not just telling them anything.
That's really good. That is really good, Marvin. So everybody from this episode should definitely understand now the value, the urgency, and the necessity behind having life insurance, period. Like, that's number one. Before we even start trying to understand it in a way to leverage it in real time, get it.
Right.
Get it. And then once you have it, once you've secured it, then you speak to a Marvin Mitchell or people who work at his company, and you start asking questions about how to leverage it. But the first thing I want you to do personally is just to have it.
Yeah.
Women.
But I will say, we can help you get it too.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
We have term insurance, and we have all the basic insurance too. So definitely want to make
women who come into your life. Are you dating right now?
I'm dating. Yes.
Oh, you are. You didn't tell me that.
I'll tell you everything.
You usually would tell me something like that.
I mean, you didn't ask.
Okay. So you are dating actively. When you are when you're dating women, do you have that conversation of life insurance and go into immediately, let's get you insured?
No. I mean, I attempt to like just find out like what type of person it is first, et cetera. Now, a lot of people, so guys are blatant, right? If a guy go into a woman's DM, it's typically, what's going on, beautiful? Like no hidden, no tack, like nothing, right? Women, on the other hand, I find that they typically lead with, I saw your video on life insurance. Can you help me? Can I get a personal one-on-one?
That's how they slide in the DMs.
That's how they slide in the DMs. They want to know a personal one-on-one about life insurance. And then typically when I say, oh, great, I could definitely help you. Let me connect you with this person to their on my team. They get a little upset. But but no, we eventually do have that conversation, but it's not like right off the back because like it ain't my I'm not trying to like, you know, put my job on somebody before I even have an opportunity to know them, you know?
Okay. So since I don't know a whole lot about this dating scenario, I was going to put you out there and say, look, y'all, he's available and he's single, but you're dating. So
I'm being good.
What does that mean?
I'm being good. Like I'm not in these streets.
Are you ever bad?
I've had my stages.
You've had your stages?
Right.
Okay. Okay. I don't know if I know the bad guy, Marvin. I think that you've always been pretty stand up.
I'm stand up.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I'm talking about as far as in dating life with women and different things like that. You know what I mean? I've had my wild stages is what I'm saying. But yeah, I think overall from a standpoint, I think a lot of people misjudge me right off the bat. So I get a lot of people who think that because I'm this finance guy, you might see me now in a suit, for example. You might think I'm rigid, but I come from the hood, too. You know what I mean? Like, I know how to party and kick it and do different things like that. So I think a lot of people are surprised when they hang out with me. They see that I'm just a normal person and I'm just, you know what I mean? I know how to put on my professional face when I need to.
Mm-hmm. So. Speaking of that, do you ever find yourself like having to code switch just a little bit because you are dealing with people's money and you are dealing with their assets and their future? And if they see you out having a drink, taking a shot, you know, and all these things, it's like, oh God, I can't trust him with my money.
Yeah, I used to. I used to think I had to. I felt that I had to dress a certain way. I had to wear a tie. I had to. I was afraid to grow facial hair because I was like, oh, people, because let's say 70% of my clients in my financial firm are white. Mm-hmm. So I used to think that if I have facial hair, they go, which was stupid. But I'm just telling you some
Don't
of the
they
ways
have facial
that.
Hair?
Yeah, I'm just telling you how right. crazy it was on what people would say to me and how you would do that. Now. Nah, like I'm not wearing a tie most of the time. I still put on a blazer sometimes out of respect because I like it. But now I do client events for my clients. I'll have 150 clients at a client event. I'll be taking a shot and drinking with them. Like we having a good time. We on the dance floor. My clients, especially my older ones that are 50, 60, 70, they will be on the dance floor all night handing me drinks. Like yes. We have a great time together. And it's so funny because I have one of my people who work with me that I hired, she's been with me for 7 years and she used to talk so with so much slang and her old company would not put her in front of clients because they would think that, oh, the clients ain't gonna like her because she'd be like, girl, what's up? How you doing? Blah, blah, blah. That's how she talked. But our most requested person, these clients, these old white clients, they love her. Mm-hmm. They love it. When you're original, when you're authentic, when you're yourself, I realize you don't have to code switch. They love that originality. Everybody's trying to code switch. Yeah. But who's that person that's going to be professional and also themselves and also use their own slang all at the same time?
I love that. We just gave you a new nickname. What is it?
It was oh, that's
Money
good.
Mentor.
It was Money Mastery Mentor because money I'm double M, Marvin Mitchell. So
Marvin
I'm Marvin Mitchell,
Mitchell
your Money Mastery Mentor.
Marvin Mitchell, your Money Mastery Mentor.
Say that 10 times fast.
Did I create that?
You probably had a hand in it
for sure. I think
Marvin
I said
Mitchell,
it.
Your Money Mastery Mentor. You said Money Mastery Coach. I just added mentor.
Mentor.
Yes.
Marvin Mitchell, your Money Mastery Mentor. Let me tell you something. Anybody that I meet who needs a lesson in what to do with their money, I refer to Marvin. I do.
And
I really
appreciate
do.
It.
I usually ask all my clients to at least have a call with you to either confirm that whatever they have in place is working or to get them what they need. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I am comfortable, you know, letting people know that you really are the money mastery mentor. Right. And it says a lot. I believe that you do a really good job. I've sat in on your webinars. I've sat in on some of your challenges. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I love about how you teach and educate is that it's I understand it. It's digestible. You're not speaking in all of these terms. These terms become necessary,
right.
But you understand and you know how to meet people where they are to make sure they understand, so they don't end up with a policy that really isn't serving them or that isn't maximizing their particular situation. So I definitely recommend you guys to go check Marvin out. His social media is going to be wherever you are watching or listening to this video. He does regular challenges over and over and over. So I don't care if you're watching this a year later, click the link and there's probably some type of an informational challenge coming up. Marvin, the people who are watching Full Transparency Podcast, they are entrepreneurs. They are hungry to learn information that sets them apart, puts them in a different space. But they're also people who see themselves in a part of your journey or in a part of what you're teaching. If you could close us out with any words to these individuals who may not be confident in talking about money. Maybe they feel like, oh, I'd love to get some information, but I don't want people counting my pockets and knowing, you know, what it is. Or maybe they're just like, I really just don't have an understanding. Like, even after this hour plus episode, I don't want to sound stupid asking certain questions.
That reminds me of something that happened. I did a big presentation with over 250 people virtually a couple of days ago. And when I did that presentation, everybody was raising their hand. The people who were raising their hand, they were like, you know, I own three properties and I got this and I got this business and I'm doing this. And that was pretty much 3 out of the 5 days that you were hearing this. So on the last day, the young lady came on, I called on her randomly. And she came on and said, well, I don't really want to say anything because I'm hearing all of these people talking about these businesses and this real estate and all of these things that they own. And I just got some extra money here. I work a normal job. I'm a nurse. I'm doing this. And I don't have what I don't even know. I was thinking, I don't even know if this is for me.
Yeah.
And it hit me. I did a horrible job communicating that because in the comments, it started going crazy. Where about at least 70 people, I counted it, commented on that. It was just like, me too. Yeah. I was afraid to say something because I thought I was alone too. And I realized that I'm highlighting and people asking questions that quote unquote have it together. But 80% of the room was people who didn't. So there is a silent majority. Just because people are not saying something doesn't mean that they're not going through some of the same things that you're going through. So never assume that you're alone just because a voice that is doing more is speaking louder. So, and another thing I would tell people is when somebody is doing great and successful, a lot of times people are intimidated to come talk to them. But what I find is those people get talked to the least because of the fact that everybody's thinking the same thing. So when you're networking, don't be afraid to talk to people and speak up and talk to people about your situation, because people got millionaires confused. A lot of people think most millionaires are rich and greedy and all of this stuff. And there's some of these entrepreneurs I meet are some of the nicest people, caring people. They want to help people. Don't be afraid to talk to them. We're all here to serve you. There's bad apples. I know a lot of poor people that have nasty attitudes. So you got to think of people as people. We all have hearts. We all want to help people. We all want to grow. So don't be afraid to make that commitment, and also believe in yourself, and don't be afraid to invest in yourself. Most people are afraid to plant a seed. When the seed, you got to plant the seed in order to get the harvest. So never be afraid to invest in yourself. Never be afraid to grow.
I love that. Thank you, Marvin, for being here.
Absolutely.
And we got to come ahead. I believe these conversations around money are the uncomfortable elephant in the room that we have to make people become more aware of, more comfortable. And even if you're not comfortable, I can think of some things that I did in my life that I wasn't comfortable doing, but I did it.
Right.
And now we're comfortable. We know how to do it, right? So we'll have to have another conversation and take the information up a notch, right? I'm eager to see how many of you guys actually reach out and get your life insurance policy in place. Learn a thing or two about how you can leverage your life insurance and protect your assets via a trust and all of the other strategies that Marvin teaches about. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert. All I know is that I have this stuff, right? As usual, in the comments below, drop the biggest takeaway for you. Maybe you are somebody that says, you know what, Donnie was right. I'd be embarrassed to ask the questions, but it's time for me to step it up. Mm-hmm. It's time for me to build that confidence. Maybe it's Marvin talking about the fact that you could get life insurance policies on other people with their consent, and it doesn't X you out of the game. It's still a way for you to play in this particular playing field. Maybe it's us talking about things that will disqualify you from life insurance that you didn't think would disqualify you, or you thought you would be disqualified because of your age or because of your income or whatever that looks like. Whatever the key takeaway is from you, write it down. Also, drop a one in the chat wherever you're watching this. Leave a one if you are making it your point to prioritize life insurance today, like right now. Like right now, because come on, we don't want people throwing fish fries for you. And that is the smallest benefit, if I'm right. being totally honest. Like Marvin said, it's life insurance. It is meant to be used during your life, not just in your death. So, again, thank you so, much for being here. We'll see y'all next week. Bye.
That's a wrap.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.